Swiss Army Nation, welcome to your podcast. This show is about you, your passion, and your experiences. Join us for panel discussions, interviews, fan profiles, and so much more. When the curtain drops, the excitement begins. So let's go. Hello, my friends, and welcome to episode 106 of the Kiss Army Nation podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Pasquale Verri.
And I am Claudio Spera. Welcome to the show, everyone.
This is a very special episode of our discussion panel. We're going to take a trip back to 1981 on that ship that sailed through the stormy seas to assess the conditions that led to the formation of the Elder. Along with Patrick de Montigny and Craig Patton, we are joined by our guest of honor, Christopher Bourriars, who will take us through the ancient door to answer the question, how has history judged music from the Elder? So first, Patrick and Craig, welcome back to the show.
Always a pleasure.
And Kiss Army, give a warm welcome to our guest of honor and friend, Christopher Bourriars. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
Chris, as you just mentioned, you know, we're so glad to have you back on the show. You know, we had a, I remember we had a great episode, you know, discussing your project and so successful, you know, Ancient Door, a tribute to music from the Elder. So, Kiss related or not, have you been working on any special projects that you would like to talk about?
Well, we're always working with music, me and Jolene. That's our job. So it's music 24/7. Well, she's been struggling with her bad back. She was struggling already when we did the Ancient Door album, the tribute album. But she's slowly getting better. So I hope she will be able to play drums in near future. And Ancient Door isn't dead yet. There are plans that I can't talk about them right now. And I don't know what the time schedule is, but we're still alive and kicking.
Ancient Door, it's far from being dead, because I can tell you, you know, since the time that you released it, I think it brought the Elder back to life. You know, it's for many fans that never thought that it was a great album, having yours, it was sensational. It was a compliment that actually gave the album much more power.
Oh, thank you, and thank you guys for putting the spotlight on our little project, and we got a lot of fans now in Canada, which is fantastic. So big shout out to you guys. Thank you very much.
Our pleasure. All right, guys, let's start this discussion. Before we step through the ancient door, I would like to forego the standard off the topic question and instead ask an obvious question directly related to our topic. What does music from the Elder mean to you? And we'll start with Patrick.
It means that the little 11-year-old boy turning 12, when this came out, it meant that Kiss, like any other band, could have a personnel change and still go on. The Elder being the first official album without Peter Criss, you know, it made me realize that, the Elder was a period that Kiss was searching for itself. After the missteps, if you want to call them, by Dynasty and Unmasked, they were trying to maybe prove something. But it means, when you look at it now, it's not as bad as some people want to make it to be. But it has a special place in my heart, for sure. It's a very overlooked period. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Claudia?
Well, it also keeps a very special place in my heart, and I'll tell you why briefly. As you all know, I jumped into Kiss in 1979, and coming from South America, we were not exposed to the first albums at that time. So to me, you know, having Dynasty and Mast and then music from the Elder, anything that was Kiss-related was fantastic to me. I didn't care much about, you know, Peter leaving the band and having a new drummer. So everything that had the Kiss logo on it, it was sensational. I'm not exaggerating here, but it was Kiss Mania back in South America in '81. So I received this album with a warm welcome, even though it was not in the line of the music that Kiss was making at that time. But hey, even to this day, you know, when I listen to it, it brings me back to that child, you know, that was experimenting with music and discovering Kiss. So same as Pat. A very special place in my heart.
Now, for the biggest Elder fan that I know, Craig, what are your thoughts?
Listen, guys, for me, it was a very special time, also a very mysterious time for the band. I mean, coming off of Unmasked and Dynasty, where it wasn't as much hard rock as it was more poppy. Being like trying to make that masterpiece and joining back with Bob Ezrin. Trying to make their own Welcome to My Nightmare or The Wall or whatever it was. I remember taking the album out, and I saw the hand on the, you know, in the middle of the record where it has that label and it has a hand on it, right? And I'm like, what is this? Usually it's not Kissified like we talk about, right? So I remember sticking it on the record player and playing it. And I'm like, okay, what is this? Like, this is not something we're used to, right? But I've learned to really appreciate the depths of the songs. And the meaning of the songs, and to me, it holds a special place because it's off the beaten track, right? It's something that you put your headphones on, you just sit back, and you just join the adventure. Mm-hmm. That's what it means to me.
Okay, Chris, how about you?
Well, I have to agree with Craig. For me, it's really a headphone album. Put your headphones on and listen to the album. It's one of my favorite albums of all time. I've listened to it so many times. It's almost like a family member now, you know. I go back to it. I spend time with it. I love it. For me as a musician, it's been very important too, because I loved all the prior Kiss albums and the rock and roll music and all that. But The Elder was more. And as a musician, it made me broaden my perspective of what music could be. It made me find other ways to both write music, produce music, And of course, listen to music. So it's a big part of my life.
For me, I remember in the 80s, I had sort of checked out. And as I was rediscovering the band in the late 80s, I was going back through their catalog and buying all the albums that I missed while I checked out. And I remember seeing The Elder on the shelves and going, okay, this can't be Kiss. And I didn't buy it. This is before the times of the iPhone, where you could do instant research, you know? So it took several years before I realized, hey, wait a minute, that really is a Kiss album. And then when I bought it, and I believe it was late 80s, maybe early 90s or something, after I rediscovered Kiss with Hide Your Heart and the Hits album. And I bought the album, listened to it, and going, what on earth is this? It doesn't look like a Kiss album. It doesn't sound like a Kiss album. And I just put it aside, and it was completely forgotten. And every once in a while, you have fans like Craig who bring up the album, how amazing it is. I go back to it. No, I don't know what they're talking about. No, not interested, you know. And I got to be honest, Chris, when this came out, your Ancient Door CD, like Claudia was saying, that for me is what revitalized my interest for the album. And after listening to this, it's like, oh, I understand. And then I went back to the record file. It's like, I really like it. And I've bought several incarnations of the album now. This is the German edition with the translucent vinyl, the half-speed remaster. I've got five or six copies of The Elder now. And I listen to it in the car quite often. I listen to Ancient Door quite often. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I really enjoy now. And to me, this is part of the Kiss catalog. It's part of history for me now.
This is interesting, Pascal. I didn't know that you hadn't listened to the album when it was just released in 81.
No, not at all. Not
oh,
at all.
Wow.
And I remember back in the 80s, when I was rediscovering the band, I loved 80s Kiss. And, you know, as a kid, I didn't like the first three albums very much. I found it was too heavy. For me, Kiss was the poppy sound, sort of pop rock sound of Destroyer. Love Gun, even. I wasn't even crazy about Rock and Roll Over.
Okay.
And I remember enjoying the 80s stuff a lot more than the old 70s stuff. Sorry, guys, it's true. But I was young. I was also into Donna Summer and Depeche Mode and, you know,
Village People.
Village People. No, you know, so.
But it goes along with the age, you know, it depends yes. what age you are. So that's yeah. why, you know.
I wasn't ready for the elder yet.
Right. Well, this is fantastic. You know, we're already having so much fun with this. So let's go into the first question. So back in 1981, the number one song was Start Me Up by the Rolling Stones. Then we had Rush, Journey, Tom Petty, and Genesis were some of the top acts at that time. On the heavy side, we had Iron Maiden, Ozzy, Van Halen, Def Leppard, and they held the top spots for best albums at that time. So then Kiss comes along with Music from the Elder. So what happened? So did Kiss just not read the room properly? Were they not aware of the music climate at that time? What do you think, Patrick?
I think they were pretty much lost because, again, as I just said previously, they you know, after being poppy and the original hardcore fans just leaving them because they were saying, okay, my favorite band has turned into a kiddie band, they had zero interest. So I think after the two pop albums, I think originally they wanted to make a heavy record, but somewhere down the line, they decided to, you know, go into a more progressive approach, which is weird. You mentioning Genesis because Genesis had become a popular band, and here is Kiss trying to sort of emulate what they were doing in their early days, especially with Peter Gabriel. So, you know, I think Kiss was just lost, even they say it themselves. But having said that, when you listen to it, there's a lot of Kiss things into it. But I think they were lost. They didn't know what to do.
Okay. Pask?
This one's a mystery to me because even before The Elder, I found Kiss was basically following trends, right? And they were with I Was Made for Loving You One Dynasty, and they definitely were with Unmasked, trying to follow off the coattails of a pop song like I Was Made for Loving You. And I don't understand how they, like it was said in the question, how they didn't read the room. If they were following trends, why not continue to follow that trend with the music like Iron Maiden, Van Halen, Def Leppard? Mm-hmm. But they went with another trend, what concept albums like Pink Floyd's The Wall? You know, and like Pat was saying, yeah, they definitely were lost. I'm not sure they realized what was happening around them, and mm-hmm. ironically, what was happening within the band as well. It just and I don't know. It's again, it's definitely a mystery of why this happened.
Okay, Craig, what about you?
Well, in my estimation, it starts with Dynasty. I mean, Dynasty was what it was. Unmasked came out with a 65%. Less selling than Dynasty, so they're floundering, right? So they throw out a lifeline to Bob Ezrin. They figure they're going to rekindle the Destroyer era and stuff like that. So he comes in, floats the idea, let's make a concept album. It seems like that's will appease the critics, we'll make a masterpiece, la la la. Gene and Paul, you know, buy in. And then Gene goes ahead and writes this story about the elder and a boy and stuff like that. And it I don't know, it just didn't, they were playing more for the critics more than themselves. They had something to prove, right? Mm-hmm. So they were going to say, oh, okay, well, you know what, those last two albums were a glitch and this is what we're going to come out with. So now we're more of it than a super group. We're a concept band, we're a Genesis, we're a Pink Floyd, we're putting ourselves into a different genre now, which doesn't fit for Kiss because it's not who they are, right? But this floundering times and bad decisions and for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. Chris?
Well, Kiss has always been a very special band. You know, they're always taking their own roads with the merchandise, with the visuals, with the makeup and everything. But they did, if you look back before The Elder, they did a couple of bold moves, I believe, in 78 with the four solo albums, never been done before.
Yeah.
Also the movie, Kiss Meets the Phantom, big plans, very, very fun concepts, but it really didn't work commercially. And then they, as you said, they kind of looked around, what do we need to do with Dynasty and Unmasked? And they believe, well, top 40 pop is where we should go. You start following other people instead of doing what we always done ourselves. And they got lost. And the intention was to make a metal album, or at least a hard rock album. That's why they went into Ace and the Hole studio in early 81 to start working on that. There's a very interesting interview made in Norway back in 80 when they did their European tour, where they were asked by a reporter, why are you making pop suddenly? And they started defending themselves. Oh, no, the next album is going to be hard rock. It's really going to be hard rock. Paul also continued saying, I don't believe that Kiss should be produced by other producers, because other producers bring in outside ideas. I don't know what Kiss really stands for, which is mind-blowing. When you think of just a few months later, they bring back Bob Ezrin, yeah. The guy that they kind of had a hard time working with back in 76. He's the guy they bring in to control this. And then the concept appears, and yeah, it's a strange but very interesting period. And I think they were panicking, I think, yeah. with the domestic sales of Unmasked really bombing with that. So they had to go to Australia to find, you know, new support. It was a strange time for them.
I fully agree. And, you know, this is the beauty of being the last one when we're having these discussions, because basically you said it all. But, I fully agree. I think we had to remember also that Kiss management was bleeding. Okay, so they were having a hard time with Bill O'Coin, that has always been kind of the compass for Kiss. Not in terms of music, but as a group, they had lost Peter. We had Eric Carp, as the new drummer. Ace wasn't happy, and I think that Kiss was desperate, because they were not very successful with Unmasked and Dynasty in the domestic market. As Chris was saying, you know, Kiss has always paid so much attention to sales in the U.S. and Canada. So and this time around, they had the back off, you know, from North America. So that's why they had to go to Europe and Australia, and I think they wanted to shake the tree. They wanted to do something different. I think they knew what was happening. As you said before, Pask, you know, reading the room. I think they did, but they wanted to do something different. They wanted to kind of experiment and be a Kiss. But unfortunately, at that time, it didn't work well for them.
So Craig mentioned Pink Floyd's The Wall, which, by the way, at that time was very highly successful, as we all know. And we also know that The Elder was not. So The Wall was a painfully honest look at the price of being a rock star. The Elder was a fantasy tale about a boy attempting to restore the balance of good and evil. Now, why didn't The Elder work, in your opinion? Craig?
I think they listened to the wrong people. I mean, that was the thing to do in those times, right, is to create that masterpiece. I don't think that it was a very healthy time for the band with Bob and Ace's substance abuses and stuff like that. And they didn't make clear and decisive decisions. I think that it was much, much, much clouded decision-making. I do think that the Elder was ahead of its time. I mean, for the band, at least, anyway. If they would have put out something different at that time, like they would have, we'll go into the question later on, but it was just an unhealthy time. And like you said, they were just floundering. They were just trying to throw darts at the wall and see what sticks and what's the trends, and, you know, create that masterpiece, appease the critics that were back and were the new return of Kiss. And it just didn't work, unfortunately, at the time. It was just not Kiss.
Okay, Patrick?
I think it didn't work because that type of thing isn't suited for Kiss. To me, it's like AC/DC trying to make a concept album. I'm not saying they wouldn't be able to, but it's not the purpose of those bands. Those bands are, Kiss has sold us the idea that they were explosive. to try to come out with something like that. They are trying to do, again, outdo Genesis, which it didn't work out because Genesis fans would say, that's Kiss, I don't want to touch it. And Kiss fans are like, well, they're trying to sound like something they're not, so I don't want it. So it was really like a no-win situation. And it's unfortunate because, as far as I'm concerned, The Elder does have its moments.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Claudio, you're not going last. You're next.
There you go. You know, I'm going to touch on the music. I think, you know, all of what Craig and Pat are saying, it's true. But I think that if The Elder had been more deep into exploding the music, and I'm not saying this because Chris is here with us, but if they had come up with something like what Chris did, you know, like really going really deep and exploding the music and not being like a kind of a floating in the middle there, I think they didn't put enough effort, and they were just going through the motions, and they needed to release a record because of the contract. But I think it didn't work because it didn't explode musically as it should. It had the so let me tell you, to me, there was so much more room to experiment musically. I think they kept it flat, even though it was not what Kiss used to do. But again, I think it could have been much better musically. That's why.
Okay. Chris, what do you think?
Well, to me, it's perfect musically. I'm not going to. It's kind of like we're sitting here slamming this project, but I certainly love every minute of it. It's just a beautiful piece of work, I think. So the comparison between The Wall and The Elder. Well, The Wall is a great Pink Floyd album made for Pink Floyd fans. Hmm. So, of course, they loved it. It's a perfect Pink Floyd album to me. Kiss tried to make a Pink Floyd album for Kiss fans, which I can't really understand why, but Kiss had a really young audience at the time, as you mentioned earlier, through the releases of Dynasty and Unmasked. I think they saw what Bob had done with The Wall. They wanted that kind of success, but you can't really sell that concept of just a concept album to kids 9 years old. They're not exactly looking for Odyssey, I believe. They like the Kiss anthems. They want I Was Made for Love and You Were Rock and Roll All Night if you're 9 years old. Mm-hmm. So I think it was an unfortunate timing. That's what I believe.
Well, first of all, I want our listeners to know that we're not slamming The Elder. We're all fans of The Elder here. We're just trying to understand what happened at the time. Number one, it's really interesting that the band didn't like the idea that they were becoming a kiddie band. Now, here is a concept that is geared towards children. This whole fantasy about good and evil and stuff like that. Number one, that's a problem. Number two, I used to teach English years ago, and my students always asked me, sir, what can I write about? Question was simple, write about what you know. And I think that was the major issue with this album. Kiss wrote about something that they don't know. You know, leave the fantasy to DC and Marvel, not to Kiss. Now, would a concept album have worked for Kiss at the time? I'm going to say maybe not this one, but a concept album could have worked in order to revitalize the band, where you created a concept about the four members and try to dive into the mystique of each of the characters in the band and do a story around that. But it's a story that's linked to reality. So in a sense, they'd be creating a concept album to revitalize the band. And I think that could have worked. And if they would have had music that is related to that particular concept, I think they would have had some amazing anthems. Because throughout the years, Kiss had a lot of anthems about, you know, raise your glasses, the state of rock and we pledge allegiance to rock and roll. You know, songs like that would have worked well in a concept album about the mystique of the band. That, I think, would have been really, really cool.
Interesting.
Yeah, very good very point.
I believe that they kind of did that with Destroyer.
That's right.
Where they amplify the personas that they have created the first few years, where you had these really demonic Gene songs like God of Thunder, The Lover in Paul, like Do You Love Me? So they kind of tried that a little bit with the Destroyer. And it's a very interesting thought that they could actually have done, like developed that concept with Bob Ezrin on this album.
The beauty of Destroyer was that it, I think you're right, Chris, it did that, but sort of indirectly and behind the scenes, in a sense. They weren't obvious about that. So here's a Gene song, here's a Paul song. As a fan and a listener, we said to ourselves, oh yeah, that's classic Gene, that's classic Paul. Oh my God, Beth, that is now classic Peter, you know? And don't forget also, the band, they were worried about Destroyer as well, because it really strayed from the Kiss concept. And then they went to Rock and Roll Over, something more raw and more like the original albums. And now they took it a 10 steps forward with The Elder and with Ezrin. You know, so again, what was going through their minds at that time?
That's so interesting. And, you know, if we come back to what we were discussing before, so not having Ace deeply involved, and basically Paul and Gene were in the driver's seat, and they loved Bob. So I think they came to Bob for the rescue, right? But that's why. Okay, so from the point of view of our discussion, a line from Just a Boy is ironic. It reads, while some eyes search for one to guide us. So Kiss was obviously lost during this time, and they needed guidance, as we just said. So along comes Bob Ezrin. Where do you put the blame, if we can say that, right? So where do you put the blame for this album? With Bob or with Kiss? Pask.
That's an interesting one. I'm not sure we could lay blame to anybody in this case, because this is something that's creative. And when you do something creative, why do you do it? You do it for yourself or you do it for your audience? I think a truly creative endeavor, you do it for yourself, and you hope that it touches your audience in a meaningful way. So you can't lay blame on how the audience will perceive your creative piece. Hey, listen, Creature didn't do well. Who are we blaming there now?
Yeah,
you know. But and Creatures is a masterpiece. It's a classic. Where would we lay blame with Kiss? No, we'd lay blame on the times. We lay blame on the fan reception. We lay blame on the band just was in a downward spiral that time anyway. It's like they were treading too much water. It was too late. There's no blame to lay. It's, hey, listen, it just happens, you know? So no, I wouldn't blame either.
Okay. Craig?
Yeah, I agree with Pask, but just to elaborate a little bit more on it, I think that it's a little bit both. Ezrin and Ace didn't show up for recording sessions at times. It wasn't taken seriously, maybe, I guess. But yeah. I mean, they're doing the album for the wrong reasons, right? They're just not a rock and roll band. They're just trying to appease what people had the perception of them. You know, like that all these guys are clowns. They're in makeup and they're poppy and they're this and they're that. Well, they're going to come with something across serious, and it wasn't handled in the right way at the right time. And it's like Pasqua saying, it's just the wrong time.
Okay. But
I think it's because there were too many things going on at the same time. Like we said earlier, losing Peter, lack of focus in the musical direction, and trying to reinvent themselves. It was just, and of course they weren't popular anymore. So I think they were desperate to try to say, no, we're still here and we're still relevant, but they were trying too hard. And I'm pretty much with everyone on this one. It's not one person in particular. It's just them trying to, you know, do something and trying to, you know, they were desperate. And I think when you're desperate, sometimes you don't make rational decisions. And so again, I think it goes back to the same thing. They were lost and desperate. So that's a very bad cocktail, you know?
Yeah. Chris.
Yeah, I thank them for the album. I don't think you should put a blame on anyone. Certainly not Ace. He was dead against the project. Eric was very hesitant about the project, but didn't really have a vote. He was a hired hand at the time, or through his years in Kistory. So they got lost. That's basically it. I'm a bit surprised that they turned to Bob Ezrin, because if you look back at the interviews that they did just prior to releasing Destroyer, as you mentioned earlier, they were very, I think, confused about Destroyer and was already talking about the next album that was going to be produced by Eddie Kramer. It's going to be a rock and roll album. And this is a short sidestep, but the next album that's going to be rock, you know? Mm. Sounds kind of familiar, right? The same thing all over back in 81. So why bring in a guy that you're almost apologetic to what you've done? On The Elder, though, Paul was very convinced that this is our masterpiece. He was so proud, he said in interviews, that when they had their first listening party at the Glickman Marks office, he was like, everyone, be quiet now. You got to listen to this. He was so, as he said, full of himself. So I think just they were not in a good place, and they were trying to shake things up, as you said. It didn't work, but we got this album, and I'm very thankful for it. And it's a strange but very good album.
Yeah, it's true. Well said. So again, as you guys said, you know, maybe not putting the blame on anybody. I think you know, over time, you know, in history, Paul and Gene, you know, when they talk about The Elder, they talk about Bob and his substance, you know, abuse at that time. But yeah, the same substance abuse made the wall, right? So it's you cannot blame on that. Now, if there were someone to blame, if we want to use that, so I think it's the band, it's Kiss, it's what's completely, you know, they were falling apart. As Chris said, you know, Ace wasn't convinced. Eric didn't have a voice, and Ace and Paul and Paul and Gene, even though it was a Gene's concept idea. Again, I love it. I like the music, as I said before. But I think that if they had been fully convinced of what they were trying to do at that time, I think the result would have been different. I think they were hesitating, as you guys said. You know, they were lost, so they were doing it because they had to, and they trusted, you know, Bob. But I don't think deep inside they were fully convinced.
Here's the interesting thing. You know, the question here is, was this album at the time a misstep or not, right? And once the album was produced, which people felt was a misstep, there were other missteps along the way. One example was the altered sequence of songs that made an already underdeveloped story even more incomprehensible, right? Mm-hmm. So here's a two-part question. So do you believe that this project was doomed to fail from the beginning? And do you believe that there was anything they could have done to save this project? This time, we'll start with Claudio.
I don't think, for your first question, I don't think that this project doomed to fail. No. It was an unknown territory for Kiss. You know, they were trying to do something that it was not rock and roll. So they trusted, you know, people around, as you guys said before. Was there anything that could have done to save it? Well, I'm going to repeat myself here, but I think if they had been fully convinced, they could have explored deeper into the music, even though the music on the album is great. I think they could have gone, you know, full force, you know, just if you want to blow it, you know, blow it a good way. So just, you know, go for it. Kind of doing Tommy the Who or doing The Wall, you know. But I have a problem because I think it's kind of it doesn't reach, you know, the top as it should. So that's my take.
Okay, Patrick.
I hate to say it, but I think it was doomed to fail right at the start, because you got to remember, again, I hate to say this, but remember Kiss was nowhere in 1980, 81. As big as they were in 78, you know, the years prior, it seems like 1980 was a year that, for some reason, it was like, okay, Kiss is totally passe. They can't get arrested. So they released a new album. I had a feeling when I think about it back then, it was like, yeah, Kiss has released a new album. Oh, by the way, it's sort of, you know. So unfortunately, because of those circumstances, I don't think the album was going to be a success. Could it have done something? Perhaps if it would have been a little harder musically, it could have been maybe like, oh, okay, they're not totally done. But they waited another album to do that. And I am afraid by that time the damage was done. I mean, it's just my opinion. But judging from what was going on, I mean, they weren't even able to do a tour with that record. So that says a lot, you know. I'm not saying the album's bad, because it's not. But I have a feeling that all those external situations made it impossible to succeed.
Okay, Craig?
I think the album would have succeeded if it was done at a different time period. Hmm. I think if they would have released Creatures first, and then later on go with Elder, it probably would have had more of a following. But I remember during the time they were on Fridays, they were on, what's that other one?
Solid Gold.
Yeah, exactly. And then they were on Entertainment Weekly, and they were pushing it, right? But for the wrong reason, I think. And you know, they altered the sequence of the songs at times. The Japanese version was different from the American version, and it didn't flow with the way the story was being told. Now, here's putting something out there. If they would have come out with a feature film, would it have been more receptive? I mean, it couldn't be any worse than Attack of the Phantoms, right? At least it would have a story behind it instead of just bubblegum movie, right? But I think that it could have been saved if they would have went with Creatures first and then revisited this a little bit down the line.
Interesting.
Okay. Chris?
Yeah, I agree. It's, if you swapped places with Creatures and the Elder, but I would like to go one step further. They would have needed to release Creatures before or instead of Unmasked. To really save, because I think they dropped the ball on Unmasked domestically. It was quite a hit in Europe, reaching at, I think, some first places, definitely like second places in markets like Germany and Norway. It was big in Australia, New Zealand. Mm-hmm. But it was too little too late. I think they should have done a harder album directly after the Dynasty tour, which was a failure in their eyes, but it was just because they couldn't sell multiple dates, but it was a pretty good tour still. And the album sold, I think, like 3 million or something like that. So making a hard rock album after that, maybe that would have saved it. But it was too little too late, as I said, with the Unmasked release. Was it doomed from the beginning? Yeah, maybe. I can't really see, I mean, hindsight's 2020, but I can't really see what kind of audience they were targeting. I can't see Pink Floyd fans suddenly say, oh, look, Bobby Sarin's made a concept album with Kiss, so I'll go and buy my first Kiss album. That's not going to happen. Yeah. I think the album failed commercially. But I think it's a long row of factors that made it fail. And one of the biggest, I think, is that they try to drop the visuals from the band.
Yeah.
Here we have a band, you know, with the makeup, everyone recognizes them. No, we're not going to show our faces on the album. We're not going to release anything with the new costumes, nothing like that. And all the merchandise, if you want kids to grasp the concept, well, where is my Morpheus action figure? You know, where's my plastic Blackwell's castle action figures not included? You know, where's all that? That could have helped KISS sell the concept. You know, we could have made it like their version of Star Wars, maybe. But somewhere there, I think they could have made it more interesting. Instead, they dropped all that. They wanted to be critically acclaimed. And sorry, that was not going to happen. And I don't think that if the critics have loved the album, it wouldn't have helped KISS sell more albums at that point. That is what I believe.
It is true.
Oh, excellent points by everybody here. First of all, I feel that Doomed is kind of harsh. I think any creative project has the potential to fail or succeed. Yeah. You know, who knows, right? Now, here's a potential question for future episodes of our discussion panel. You know, oftentimes, KISS does something, but they don't back it up 100%. You know, they keep saying, why produce another album? Fans are just going to want to listen to our old stuff. Yes, but if you're going to do something, back it up 100%, believe in what you're doing, and push. And fans are going to be receptive to it. I believe that Carnival of Souls wasn't successful because they just put it out there.
Yeah.
That's it. But if they were to sing some of those songs live and have merchandise, like Chris was saying, around the album, it might have been more successful than it was. Sonic Boom and Monster could have been more successful. They played more songs live, more merchandising around it. Believe in what you're doing. Now, listen, you guys have made a lot of good points about, you know, when The Elder could have been released. And Chris, I totally agree with you. It would have been amazing if it was released after Creatures was released after Dynasty. Great point. But let's, for sake of argument, it was released when it was released. I agree with some of the comments that were made. You're going to do this? Go full out. Go with the merchandising. Go with the movie. Push. Would it have been as successful? Successful? Who knows? More successful? Yeah, possibly. But at least fans know that whatever KISS does, they believe in what they're doing. Now, going back to my analogy as being a teacher, you know, if I'm teaching something and I don't believe in what I'm teaching, the kids are not going to believe it as well, and they're not going to enjoy it. So even if I might be teaching something that I find boring myself, I got to go out there and sell it. That's what KISS needed to do for this album. Maybe it would have been more successful.
Yeah, exactly. Let's move into the next one. So many KISS fans throughout history have scratched their heads on some of the songs chosen for a KISS album and others which have not. Some interesting exclusions from music from The Elder include Deadly Weapon, Nowhere to Run, It's My Life, Partners in Crime, and Rock and Roll Hell. Do you believe the inclusion of some or all of these songs may have helped the record? Chris, we'll start with you.
Well, as a concept album, no, I don't think so. They did record Deadly Weapons and Nowhere to Run in, I think it's February 81, together with Rob Freeman in the newly built Ace in the Hole studio up in Connecticut at the Fraley Estate. And that was kind of like what they were recorded, Feels Like Heaven, Reputation too, I think. Those songs they presented for the record company to get the advance so they can continue with it. But the band felt at the time that it was more like a continuation of the Unmasked style of music. So that it wasn't rock enough for them. So they wanted to do something different. They brought in Bob Ezrin. They started making demos with him, and he said, no, this is not going to work. And there, the idea of the concept album was born. And those songs, no, they wouldn't have done anything for the concept album because I think they're too poppy. It's still pop, you know. So Rock and Roll Hell has a cool vibe, but that's a cover song. So I'm not sure that KISS would have paid the money it takes to rewrite a cover song to fit the concept. Mm-hmm. Odyssey is obviously a cover song too, but they didn't have to change that. And it wasn't released with Tony Powers until I think 82 or 84, somewhere between that. So it was a new song for the public. So no, those songs wouldn't have helped the album.
Okay, great. Thank you. Craig?
100% agree with Chris. I don't think that those songs would have fit in the shuffle of the album whatsoever. Here's something to put out there. If they would have taken those songs and instead of releasing like with the Elder, like what we're saying, if they would have put a double album out of Creatures and throw those in into the Creatures scenario, I think that would have that would have been great. I mean, can you imagine, like, you know, floundering after Mast and Dynasty and saying the return, the heavy return of Kiss, and then putting out a double album and shoving it in our faces to say, here, you know, and it could have been so much more merchandising things on that too, but that wasn't the question. But the question was being those songs, and I don't think they would fit in the shuffle whatsoever. I mean, and if they were gems in there, and I think some of them are gems, they would have not got the airplay or the attention they deserved. Mm-hmm. Just because of concept album, and people would just turn the record over and put something else on, you know.
Okay, Patrick.
No, I'm with you guys. I don't think they would have fit because, again, I think at first those songs, I think those were the first songs they were working on after the Unmasked tour. And I think probably along the way they took like a left turn, saying, no, instead of doing this, let's go into the progressive territory. So I don't think those songs would have had their place. Now, I pretty much like the Craig's idea of saying, why wasn't The Elder a double album? Although I remember reading an interview with Gene when the album just came out saying that there was going to be a part two. Maybe those would have fit better on a part two, but of course we know that never came to be. But I think those songs, yeah, maybe in the second part of the story, who knows, they could have brought a way to fit them in, but maybe they would have had to do like they did with Ace's song Dark Light. Originally it was Don't Run. I don't know if you guys ever heard that demo. I mean, the songs, the lyrics didn't fit with the concept, so that's why Ace or whoever had to rewrite.
Lou Reed. It was Lou Reed that's brought in to rewrite Don't Run.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, you know, they would have had to do something like that because I don't think the lyrics, when you listen to them, would have fit with the concept.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Okay. Pask?
Okay. I'm going to say yes. I think it would. If you changed the concept of the album away from the storyline that The Elder is now to the concept of looking at the characters of the band, some of these songs would have worked really well under that particular concept. So mix some of the Elder songs with these songs, it'd be amazing. For example, on The Elder, I would keep A World Without Hero, The Oath, Odyssey, I. Those, I think, are great songs about rock and roll and about the band themselves. Imagine adding Rock and Roll Hell, Nowhere to Run, It's My Life. I think it would work for the concept of exploring their mystique.
Yeah, but by doing that, you're changing the complete thing, right? So it's
absolutely.
It's not The Elder anymore.
No. Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. But... if you were to add those songs to The Elder, no, I agree with all of it. It absolutely would not work. There's no way. You're creating a whole different album. Absolutely.
It could have been a fantastic, different concept album, as you said before. And this is what they were trying to do with Psycho Circus, but didn't work, right? So they were trying to create a mystique again. Well, in my case, I agree with you guys. So I don't think that the inclusion of those songs would have helped the record. There are some songs there that I love, you know. To me, Nowhere to Run, to me, it's one of my favorites, you know, all time, but it doesn't fit, you know. The lyrics has nothing to do with the concept album for The Elder. Rock and Roll Hell, another great tune, but as Chris said, you know, I don't think they were gonna put a cover there. But yeah, so we're trying to find ways to help The Elder, but not even get put in our hands to other songs we'll do.
You talked about releasing a double album. That's what was the plan initially, I believe, to make the first part a double album. But there wasn't enough time. The original expiration date for the new Kiss album was in the mid-June, I believe. And the first time that it went in studio with Bob was mid-May. So they just wasn't the time. They had just signed a big contract with Polygram too. So it was kind of, they were under the gun to produce something. So they couldn't make the double album. So it was meant to be a double album, and then the part two album, which was supposed to be called War of the Gods. But there just wasn't enough time for that. So,
okay. So this next question, you know, I had Craig in mind. You know, when you see the love fans have for this album, you got to tell yourself, you know, was this album really ahead of its time? So imagine you had the ability to travel 40 years in the past. What would you tell KISS fans of the time who were just beginning to experience music from the Elder? Craig.
I would tell them basically play it nonstop. It grows on you. You get more into the psyche of the album. You get to understand more the meaning of the album, the good versus evil, it's only a phase, right? So I think that the more you listen to it, the more you appreciate it. If it's a one-off and you're listening, you go, I don't know about this too much. But if you play it nonstop, and like Chris was saying before, with the headphones, there's a lot of weird stuff behind the scenes you don't really hear on an album or through your speakers, but you hear it through your headphones. And it's just a different experience. I mean, tell them, look, don't expect a Dark Side of the Moon or of the Wall. It's not that. It's something totally different. It's fantasy, right? So you got to understand it's a story. It's not just a rock album.
Okay, Patrick?
I would say to the fans at the time, I would say, look, yes, it is different, but and yet not that different. If you listen to The Oath, it's pretty much KISS standard. You know, it's a hard rocker.
Yeah.
So I don't hear anything that different. I, of course, which is very reminiscent of early anthems, I would say there's your ace song there, Dark Light. Mm-hmm. So don't get too worked up with the talking between the songs or, you know, the sort of like thing that drives one song to another. That's just like a little add things that are being added. But get to the core of it. It's not that different from a KISS record. It's just the presentation and the mixture that makes it, you know, like, oh, okay, what's this?
It's the fluff.
Yeah, exactly. And Only You, that's another song I forgot. You have Gene and Paul trading vocals, nice. A la Shout It Out Loud. So is it that different? I don't think so.
Okay, cool. Mario?
Yeah, I'm with Craig. You know, it's just about enjoy the journey, and I will tell them to explore on the, because to me, along with Destroyer, these are the two only albums that has like multi layers in music. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's deep dive into that and try to find a new experience with KISS. Because KISS has always been recognized as meat and potatoes, you know, rock and roll, flat, one dimension kind of thing. But with The Elder, it's a complete different journey. So I will encourage them to go deeper into that and find, you know, musicality on those guys that you never thought they had.
Okay. Chris?
Yeah, I would tell them, open your minds. Don't look at KISS, The Elder, as a classic KISS rock album, because it's not. It wasn't supposed to be a classic rock album. It was a chance for the band to discover new musical territory, and I celebrate them for that. And I believe that looking back now, it's much easier too, because you put it in context and you see KISS has tried different things through the years, and I think it's easier to appreciate. You appreciate it now than it was back in 81 when it was so different, you know. So open your minds and listen to it as a good album and not a classic KISS rock album.
No, Chris, you hit the nail on the head when you said we appreciate it more now because it's more in context with KISS-tory. There was no context back then when it was first released. If you remember Back to the Future, when Marty played the heavy metal at the high school dance, yeah. Everybody was like stunned. And he goes, yeah, but your kids are going to love it.
Yeah.
That's what I would tell fans. I would say, right. You know what? You're not ready for this, but your kids are going to love this.
That's a good one. I love
it. We need a DeLorean.
We need a DeLorean, exactly.
It's true. Guys, I think we could be doing this episode, an album, a disservice if we didn't specifically discuss the album itself. Okay, so we're not going to go deep dive, you know, it's more general on three questions, you know, that I want to have your view. So question one, which song or songs do you believe come close? And you mentioned some of those songs before. Which song or songs do you believe come close to being a Kiss song? Patrick, you mentioned that before.
Yeah, The Oath and probably also I think those are the two closest to the classic Kiss we know.
Okay. Pask?
Just a Boy, Under the Rose. No, not at all. Odyssey, The Oath definitely would be the closest thing to a Kiss song on a Kiss album. Remember what they did with I Was Made for Loving You, right? It's very disco, very pop, but yeah. They made it hard rock live. They could do the same thing with some of these songs. It would sound incredible.
I agree.
I'm surprised you mentioned Odyssey.
Me too,
That's interesting.
Just the idea. That one. Odyssey, again, it's the idea of the band writing about themselves in a sense. Is what I enjoyed about that. Again, I would also change some of the lyrics to some of these songs too to fit more of the Kiss concept rather than of the Elder concept, right? Make some lyrical changes, but the musicality of the songs I think would fit on an album.
Okay. Correct.
Fair enough. Like I said, this is great homework for me. I you know, the only time I stayed after class to do the extra homework. Only You, that's my favorite song in that album, and I believe it's in the vein of like a Within kind of thing, or A Journey of a Thousand Years, something like that. The Oath, and I do feel that, I mean, Under the Rose is a very underrated song, in the right context and the right lyrical value. I think it would fit in another Kiss album. But those are all great tracks, I believe.
Chris?
Yeah, I agree. The tracks that I love most on this album are probably the tracks that sound different from earlier Kiss records. Only You is actually it stems from a very old song called Eskimo Sun. So I believe Gene wrote it back in 69. Mm-hmm. I think it might have been on his production tape. Back to what it recorded prior to Wicked Lester. So that's an old one. But looking at the songs as classic Kiss songs, well, of course, The Oath. I believe that The Oath has a twin song, and that's Exciter from the Lick It Up album. If you put on the main riff on Exciter, you will hear it has quite a lot of similarities with that you have in The Oath. So it's like, okay, The Oath didn't go anywhere. Let's kind of reuse that because it's a good idea. Both songs are great songs. Mm-hmm. If they had recorded The Oath like in 83 or later, Paul would probably not have done the falsetto thing, which would have helped the song tremendously much, I believe, among Kiss fans. I think the falsetto kind of put a lot of Kiss fans off, which is too bad, but it would have been a classic Kiss song, I believe, if they'd done it a little bit later. Dark Light is classic Ace at the time for me. It has the same DNA as songs like Talk to Me, Hard Times, that kind of riffing, even though it's actually Anton Figg that wrote the riff. Funny story. But that's a classic Ace song at the time. I, of course, with the shared vocals, it has the same DNA as Shout It Out Loud. So there are quite a few classic Kiss songs on the album. It's just that the production makes it a bit different, but it's a good, these are good classic Kiss songs, I believe.
You know, it's funny because when I was doing my homework and I wasn't trying to call Craig, you know, to give me his answers, but we're always close. But it's interesting that it's so underrated, but you know, fortunately with time, the Elder got the place that it deserved. Out of the 10 songs, we're just saying here that there's five or six songs that are great Kiss songs.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that there are many Kiss records that have that amount of good songs in it. Okay, so this is interesting. In my case, I have to go with I, of course, Only You. I think it could perfectly fit into a Kiss album. Dark Light, I fully agree with Chris. To me, it's in the vein of typical Ace, you know, classic Ace. And of course, The Oath. And I don't know if you knew this, but this is interesting. We were talking about the different pressings all over the world, but in South America and particularly in Argentina, the album opens with The Oath. So, which is something interesting because, you know, they were trying to push, you know, the marketing side, making it look like, you know, the first song in the album basically sets the standard. And, you know, having The Oath as the first song kind of, okay, well, this is still Kiss, okay? Then it kind of goes into, you know, Just a Boy and all the other songs, but at least, you know, you get the first impression right, you know, with The Oath.
Very well, cool. Actually, it was released like that in Europe, too. Most markets except Japan had pretty much the original idea, but it was lacking Escape from the Island.
Yeah.
Which suggests that it was the last song recorded for the album and it didn't quite make it because they released it in Japan prior to Europe and in right. the US.
Okay. The second question, which song or songs do you believe would work live today? Claudio.
I think The Oath and I. I, it's typical anthem, you know, going for yourself, do what you believe in, la, 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 the usual Kiss stuff. And The Oath. You know, I remember when I experienced The Oath in the cruise, to me that was, this is it, man. So these guys, they need to play this song live. Of course, the falsetto, you know, as Chris was saying, could be an issue. But what a song, man, to play live. It's unbelievable. Just that opening riff, it's a masterpiece.
Yeah, Chris?
I agree 100%. Watching The Cruise, the clips from The Cruise, I think it was it in 2013? They did.
Yeah,
I
think it was number four or three. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. It makes me wish that they made it a standard in the sets because, and also, you know, the vocal range of The Elder is actually, it's one of the few albums that I believe Paul could actually sing. So he could do The Oath, he could do I without any problems. So I agree.
Hey, Patrick?
Just like everybody else, I think I and The Oath are the ones that would work live, and especially since they had done it on the Fridays, we know it does. They do work those songs.
Oh yeah,
do work for sure. So maybe also A World Without Heroes, which they have done on Unplugged. You know that song. You know it's maybe a slower time during the show, but I think it would work as well. I think people would go nuts if they did that live.
Yeah, Craig?
Yeah, I love that footage from the Fridays. I have it saved on my hard drive and I watch it quite often. It's definitely special. For me, it definitely, I go with you guys. It's I, The Oath. But I would throw in there a Dark Light for Ace. I think that would be interesting live. I mean, when we go to the cruises and stuff like that, I believe they did play I also on one of the cruises. And I don't like the way they downplay themselves saying, well, you know, this one's for you because you guys are the only ones who bought the album.
Yeah.
Funny as it is, but when they start that, and the crowd goes crazy, you know, so there is a market for it there. They just don't want to explore it. But no, definitely those three songs for me would cut it. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say Only You too.
I would, but I think, but you know, it's one of those songs, honestly, it's like Within. Within is fantastic on the album, but live, it's like, what songs is he singing? It doesn't work live.
Okay, listen, I'm not trying to be different for the sake of trying to be different, but you know, like Chris was saying earlier on, it's all about context, right? And what are Kiss fans clamoring for right now? Different songs in a set list, deep cuts. I think Kiss fans would want to hear any of these songs live. They would lose their minds. Yes, the diehards absolutely over the general public, and I agree with you guys. Definitely, The Oath would work live at a regular Kiss show, but on an acoustic set, for example, a private smaller venue for diehard fans on a Kiss cruise, any of those songs would work. But look at what Kiss did with Orchestra. They opened with Fanfare.
Yeah.
You know, I could see a concert opening with Fanfare. That would be cool. You could also put in Escape from the Island in a set. I think that would also work. If you do a melody of some of these songs and so make them a little bit harder, like they did with I Was Made for Loving You, I think they'd have a new generation of fans discovering this album.
Good point.
Yeah. Super cool. So final question now on songs. Do you believe, should A World Without Heroes have been a Gene song? Craig, start with you.
I clamored over this one for a couple of minutes, actually. And I would say yes. I think it fits that it's to tame the demon, you know, kind of thing. It goes with the story, you know, good versus evil. I think that... for the villain or whatever you want to call him, the demon would sing a slower song. I think that the lyrically too, I think it fits more with Gene than it does with Paulo, I believe.
Okay. But
yeah, I'm one of those people that say leave it as is. It's perfect this way. I couldn't picture Paul singing. I'm not saying he wouldn't do a great job, but to me that's totally a Gene thing for sure.
Chris.
Yeah, I think it's one of Gene's finest moments on any Kiss album, actually. And I love it the way it is. And as Kiss stated prior to the release, they said this isn't the soundtrack of the movie. It's a compliment to the movie.
Yeah.
So the guys aren't doing actual characters, except for Paul that does he sings all the boy songs. But they aren't specific characters. So Gene sings both about the evil side and the good side. So, and I think he does a tremendous job. So, and Paul also has a lot of, he has all the other ballads, like Yes, the Boy and Odyssey on the album. I think it was a good choice to let Gene have the other one. I would have loved to hear a version where Eric Carr sang it, though. I don't know if it's due to politics within the band that he wasn't allowed to sing on that album, but it would have given the album another dimension that was interesting, and why not that song? So, but Gene does it perfectly.
Interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ask.
I thought about this one. First of all, at the time, I don't think it was appropriate for Gene to sing it because it's again another misstep in my opinion. Because Gene was always the face of Kiss; he was the demon, and now you're going to neuter the guy. It's you know, what are fans gonna think now? You know, it's like, okay, forget it. We don't even have the demon anymore in the band. What's the point? I think it's a great song. I love that Gene did it. I loved it on Unplugged, and it was fantastic that they did it on Unplugged. And I you know, that should also be definitely a live song that Gene should sing. But you know what? Wouldn't it be cool if that was a band song? Not just Eric, but everybody in the band sings verses from the song. It would have been a cool concept for the band concept, the character concept for this album. All four members singing something. That would have been cool.
That's interesting. Here's Chris taking notes for his upcoming project.
I'm not sure I can. Hear A singing A World Without Heroes, though. But I would love to have done that with I, and done that into a band song. And with the demon being neutered, I don't know. We have a demon that sang when we wish upon a star. in 78.
Yeah, exactly. So I forgot about that one.
Yeah.
Talk about neutered.
Good point. So yeah, War Without Heroes, definitely to me a Gene song, and this is one of the beauties that Kiss has. Okay, so everybody, you know, portrays Gene as the demon, but I remember showing the video of War Without Heroes to non-Kiss fans, and they loved it. You know, they saw a new venue with Gene. And musically, you know, the song is super. It's perfect. To me, that's definitely a signature song for Gene, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Here's a thought, guys. I was thinking, like, imagine poor Eric Carr, you know, it's his first full album recording with Kiss, and they come up with a concept album. He must have been, like, being that fly on the wall saying, okay, I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah.
It's true, eh?
Hard rock goes Genesis, you know.
Yeah, but he recorded some disco tracks with his previous bands, with the Creation Salt and Pepper project. So I think he was pretty much open minded to music coming from the top 40 scene locally in New York. So, but it's an interesting thought, him making that album as his first Kiss album.
Yeah,
he must be a bit confused.
Yeah. And you know, in typical Bob Ezrin style, I think you know, many fans still wondering why, you know, Eric didn't play on some of the songs, like I, for instance. You know, also, yeah. What the hell? It's kind of strange.
Right.
Yeah, and the performance at Friday's shows that there's no, he does it perfectly. I think
exactly.
Their live performance on Fridays overall is fantastic. So I would have loved to see that that they would take it on the road.
Yeah,
and they had the plans. I think it was first they planned a 7-week tour, which turned into several months, and they would bring keyboard players, and there were big plans and everything. Mark Ravitz started designing the stage and everything, but they gave up on it, which I believe is a mistake. They kind of buried the album right there and then.
Yeah.
All right, guys. So let's close the show with how we started, with the question, how has history judged music from The Elder? So based on everything that we talked about, how do you believe fans today judge the album? Patrick?
I think now, especially the people were there back then, tend to give it another chance and say, you know what? Yes, for a long time, it was the black sheep of the family. But when, again, it goes to listening to it with an open mind and saying, well, at least they tried something different. I think that's the vibe people have now. It's like, hey, you know what? They dared to try something different. Okay, it didn't work out. But when we listen with mature ears, you go, wait a second, there's some good stuff on there, really good stuff. And, you know, it's worth giving it a listen. I think that's why it has a cult following,
yeah.
That album. I think that's why. Open-minded. So I was the first one to hate it when I was a kid, but you listen to it now and you go, come on, there's good stuff on that. There's, you know, quality material, and you know, it was as Paul said, a well-intentioned attempt to expand. So, you know, we can say hats off for them for doing that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Claudio.
Well, to me, time has made justice to this album. You know, it's I couldn't say it's amongst my favorites, but almost. Okay, I have a. Definitely, you know, there's so much musicality in there. The times were really interesting. You know, even the looks of the band, you know, it stands on its own, because if you look at, you know, Creatures, then they come back to the typical, you know, Kiss visuals. But you know, it's a one off, and to me, it's always beautiful to have one off in a series of, you know, so many records and such a long story, or history, I have to say. But this one off, or the black sheep, as Pat was saying, to me, it's a fantastic black sheep.
Yeah.
Okay, Craig.
Yeah, I think when you go to the Kiss cruises and they mention they're going to play something from the Elder, they all go nuts because it's not something you hear every day. It's not something that is in the normal Kiss catalog. I think if you just take the album for what it's worth and what it means to you, because it means different things to different people. You can relate to certain songs, you can't relate to other songs, but I just think if you just, for what it is, you enjoy it and you definitely, I think that history has changed people's minds about it since they heard some songs live and how well it produces live. Look, it's one of my faves. It's one of my top threes, I guess. And I think it's going to continue that way. I think it's, the more you listen to it, the more you appreciate it.
I love that Kiss has finally given some props to the album by releasing an anniversary edition for the vinyl, the colored vinyl. And I think, you know, they're telling fans, okay, first of all, yes, this is something that you want, so here you go. But this is also something that it's worth releasing because it's part of our history. It's part of what we've done, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, with you know, the Ancient Door being released as well, more and more people are giving attention to the music from the Elder. Yeah. And I think more and more people now are rediscovering and discovering music from the Elder and realizing that this is part of the Kiss catalog. It's part of who Kiss was. And, you know, my goal in life is to live life without having any regrets. And I have no regrets because I've made mistakes in my past, but it made me who I am today. Yeah. Same thing with this album. This album is part of their history, and this album is part of what made the band today. And the final word, Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd like to quote Victor Frankenstein, I believe. It's alive. And more and more Kiss fans seems to appreciate it, which I think is great. As we touched on the subject earlier, that I believe back in 81, it was the Ugly Duckling, because besides from maybe Peter's solo album and Gene's solo album, Kiss had pretty much stayed in the same fold. So this was the Ugly Duckling adventure that people didn't really get at the time. But since then, we have Metal Kiss. We have 80s hair metal pop, top 40 Kiss. We had, you know, flirting with grunge on Carnival of Souls. They've mm-hmm. done so many things and gathered so many fans through the years that it's not that soul different project anymore. You have so much different music in the Kiss catalog, which makes it easier for people to just, I think, listen to it with an open mind and not just judging it or comparing it to the golden years or like 76 to 78. Well, this is not Kiss. It is. It's just one of many phases of Kiss, you know. So time has brought more fans, and I'm happy. I'm happy for that. I'm happy for the album because it deserves to be listened to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You guys, you know how much I love these discussion panels. And it's funny because after we finish, you know, recording, we send each other, you know, text. Oh, this has been great. You know, I can't wait for the next one. So this is so much fun. But the fact that it was linked to The Elder, it made it really, really special. Yeah. And having Chris with us also, you know, it's a big bonus for us, for all of the listeners and people who are following our podcast. Definitely one of my faves of these episodes. You know, thank you so much, each one of you. And, you know, I can't wait for the next one.
Again, this is great being part of this. I always enjoy discussing it with other people because even if we don't have the same opinions, that's what I love about this. When we have these discussion panels, we don't all say the same thing like, yeah, I agree. We all say, well, I see it from that perspective, and I prefer this for this reason. So it's like, well, it's interesting. I still stick to my opinion, but I'm like, oh, I like to hear other people's take on it and even find it interesting. So especially with a subject like The Elder, which is, as I said, it's the one that people are hit and miss. You either love it or hate it. So, yeah. But talking about that in the discussion panel, wow, what a trip. Mm-hmm.
Greg, this was your idea. What do you think?
Well, thanks a lot, guys, for getting getting on board with this. It's a topic that's close to my heart and something that really I enjoy. Chris, your version of Ancient Door is fantastic. I listen to it quite often, and you know, hats off to you. That version of Only You is, I would say, probably better than the original. So keep it up.
Don't go there.
hopefully, I know. I don't want to get yelled at. But hopefully you'll do some more versions of other albums. That would be fantastic. But guys, thanks again. I love the different points of views, and you know, sometimes it changes my points of view if I'm hearing from something what you guys say. That's all. That's all about.
You know, we've always said this podcast is about, you know, promoting fans, their projects, promoting anything Kiss. And how can we do an episode not promoting The Elder? You know, it's part of history, and it's an important part of history, and it's something that should be discussed. And again, I'm so glad that we did that. And Chris, thanks again for being on the show. You've added a different perspective, and I've learned stuff about The Elder that I never knew before. So fantastic discussion, Chris, and thank you again so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me on the show again. It's been so much fun. And I think the thing that makes Elder for me so stand out and be it's so interesting talking about it is that it was a commercial failure for Kiss, and it's a watershed among fans. So it's very interesting to discuss it. And we could discuss Alive, and all fans will say, "Yeah, it's a great album," and what more can you say?
Yeah, right.
But this because of all the stories around it and the fact that it didn't succeed, it makes it much more interesting to dive into and talk about what went wrong and what went right and how did we end up like in this place with this album. But you know, I could talk for hours about this album. I love every minute of it, as I said, and it's been so interesting hearing you guys talking about your views on the album. So as I said, I could go on forever with this, you know.
But that's it, Chris. You sort of mentioned it off air that, in a sense, every question, there's so much you could have added to those questions. This could have been like a 5-hour episode, you know. Because
let's do it.
Really, right? Because, but it just goes to show how special this album really is. There's so much to talk about. There's so much to go into that we could come up with several episodes with several topics related to this album. It's just incredible. So, Kiss Army, in your opinion, how do you think history judged music from The Elder? Let us know in the comments section below. And everyone on the panel, thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Kiss Army, if you have any questions, comments, or ideas, please send them to talktome@kissarmynationpodcast.com. Until the next time, remember, never stop rocking. Take care, everyone. If you enjoyed this episode, like and subscribe on YouTube or follow us on Spotify, Podomatic, iHeartRadio, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Don't forget to make yourself heard. Leave us a comment on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. See you all soon, Kiss Army.